Hi, Graham.
Hey, Oliver.
Yeah, I am in the hospital, but I said, oh, I can join waiting for to finish the surgery. So I say I can connect.
Can you
So
tell
you're going to
me?
present, yes?
I'm going to start and then Chunlong and Zhao Gun are going to. Can you tell me if you can see my slides?
Of course, yeah. Yes, I can see your slides.
It's presentation mode.
Yeah, it is in presentation mode.
Okay.
Yeah, now it's good. Why I had another link? I
Yeah,
just
there were two links. So I logged into the one from last week. If no one shows up, I'll switch to the other one.
Okay. Yeah, I clicked the other one. Then I was the only one there.
Was there anybody in the other one?
No, currently nobody's there.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know why. The other one is weekly, right? Or both? Weekly or actually, I don't know which one I joined now.
I did the one that we used last week, so I think
Oh,
that's
okay.
the right
Maybe
one.
that's the right one. I think the other
Yeah.
one could be just that it used to be a monthly meeting, right? For the leadership. Xiaogang is here. Hey,
Hi.
Xiaogang.
Hi, Jim. How you doing?
Hi, Christian. Well, I'm doing well.
Great.
Well, I feel like I know everyone on the call right now.
I
Oh,
think we usually need to wait for a few minutes, right?
yeah, we'll wait. We'll wait till we get a bigger quorum.
Yeah. So, Jim, from your email, it seems that you still work on your subcontract.
Yeah, we don't have any of our subcontracts in place, so
Wow.
I'm requesting a deferral from next week, which hopefully that'll be fine.
We had our subcontract placed like I think at least 1 month ago.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
University of Washington was actually the slowest, oddly enough.
There was a connection issue, sorry.
Hi, Ting.
Hey, Tim.
Hello, how are you?
So who is the organizer? Paul? Is Paul available today?
I didn't see an email from him saying he wasn't. He usually did the introductions, if I remember.
Yeah. Wait 5 minutes, maybe. I mean, usually it will be great. It's like before the presentation, if everybody can see the title.
I'm still sharing, right, Chenlong?
Yeah, we can see your first slide. What I mean is like the email, right? Kind of like our bi-weekly meeting. We can send an email, let everybody know who will present and then what the topic will be.
Yeah, there is a schedule, but it's been revised a few times.
But I don't think that schedule goes to everyone. At least I have never seen that schedule. Oh, Nepal is here.
Let's see. I see Paul is now on.
Yeah, Nepal is the host. I think he's, yeah. Hey, Paul.
Hi, Paul.
Hey, real quick, I think there's some other folks that are on another.
Yeah, there were two links. I think someone need to go
Let's
there
see.
and tell them to join this one.
Yeah, I'll tell them and I'll be right back.
Okay, thanks. Yeah.
I think the reason there are two links is one is for just like the PIs and deputies for the Meerkat projects, and the other is this larger one, which goes to all of the team members.
Okay.
So this was the same link from last week, which is why I used it. Hopefully this is the right one.
I think it's the right one, Grant. It's the one with many more attendees.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it just happened that one overlapped right for this week. And Tin, do you currently have a student on this project?
Yes, I'm in the process of locating one.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, I
So
think.
you later send us the student
Yes.
contact information.
Right. So we still need to figure out how much effort the student need to invest because he's currently working also on another project. So
Oh, okay.
I think since the grant itself doesn't cover a full student, so yeah, I need
Okay.
to talk to him to understand the research expectation and deliverable.
Okay, that's fine. Yeah. I mean, for our bi-weekly meeting, we need a like we are still organized this like email list. Yeah.
Yeah, great. Thanks.
Paul usually does some introductions or business first, right before we start.
Yeah. We can wait. I think they probably went to other link.
I'm not sure Paul is connected. I doesn't seem.
He was here like a few minutes ago.
Oh, okay. Maybe to step out.
I think Christian, like Christian, went to check the other link. There are some people in the
Yeah.
other. Oh yeah, Christian, you're back.
Yeah, Jeff Nelson went out to tell the other attendees. He should be right back.
Okay. Is Paul over there?
everyone. So
yeah, multiple. Oh, and that is bizarre. We have to be 2 minutes.
Yeah, this one's the same length from last week and the previous meetings, and then there's a new one for today for some reason.
Oh.
I think maybe we should just start.
I was going to wait to see if Jeff came back.
Yeah, all okay. Maybe we should start.
Yeah, why don't you go ahead and start?
Okay, that's fine. Thank you. So, yeah, good afternoon, everyone. My name is Grant Johnson. I'm a scientist at Pacific Northwest National Lab. We're still getting some noise there, so if you could mute yourself, please, that'd be great. So pleased today to give you an overview of our Microelectronics Science Research Center project, which is titled Assembly of Molecular Memristors for Energy Efficient Computing. And the sort of theme of the overall project is captured by this graphics that we just recently had made up, where we have molecular memristors in this case, which are actually molecular metal oxides or polyoxymetallates. And then we use biological scaffolds, in this case peptoids, to arrange those into device level structures for testing. So I'll give kind of an overview of the project and I'll talk about my thrust, which is focused on sort of local interactions. I'll then hand it off to Chunlong Chen, who's the project manager for this project here at PNNL. And he'll tell you more about the macromolecular assembly. And then Xiaogun Lang will tell you about the device testing that we're doing with these materials. So I think this audience knows pretty well the goals of neuromorphic computing and the desire to build biologically inspired systems that mimic the brain's parallel event-driven and energy efficient information processing. So this is inherently different to sort of von Neumann computing architectures where you're shuffling information back and forth between computers and memory. And we need materials that basically function as biological synapses. So there's a lot of work that's been done on neuromorphic chips and architectures like these memristive crossbar arrays. But there are still some material challenges associated with these. And we think that our molecular approach to memristors might have some inherent advantages to address some of these issues. So memristors play a key role in neuromorphic computing. This is due to their nonlinear dynamics, their multi-level or analog conductance, and the fact that they can be very low power use in certain implementations. They also have the advantages of being non-volatile, fast, and again, overcoming that von Neumann bottleneck. So the traditional architecture usually looks something like this. You have your memristive material with a top and bottom electrode. And then the characteristics of this, the voltage current response, looks something like this for a digital response and like this for an analog response, which is more what we're interested in for these neuromorphic computing applications. And the market for memristors is predicted to grow dramatically over the coming years as these things are increasingly used in IT telecoms and in other industries. So as I mentioned, despite all their advantages, there are also some challenges that need to be overcome. One of these clearly is the variability, the device-to-device and cycle-to-cycle variability, in addition, degradation. And both of these basically relate to the stochastic switching mechanisms that impede reproducible memristor performance. So on the right-hand side there are just the various mechanisms by which these materials can function. In our case, we're concerned with metal oxide. So the two most important phenomena, of course, are oxygen vacancy migration and also conductive filament formation. And we'll explain a little bit about how our molecular memristors can be used to modulate both of those effects. So this is kind of an overview figure that summarizes the objectives of our project. We aim to self-assemble molecular memristors with long-range order for resilient and energy-efficient neuromorphic computing. So you can see there on the left-hand side, hopefully you can see my laser pointer. We want to take these molecular metal oxides, which are sort of nanometer scale molecular metal oxides. These have multiple electronic charge states or redox states, each of which gives a discrete current voltage response. But we need a way to put those into a material with long-range order that's well organized on a 2D electrode interface. So to do that, we're leveraging peptoids, which are biomolecular polymers, which will allow us to assemble these polyoxymetallates into more ordered structures, creating individual synapses basically for a single polyoxymetallate, and then into larger synaptic networks. So the key games here are controlling that local environment around this molecular metal oxide to give it the current resistance performance that we want, and then arranging it into longer range order on electrode materials that are compatible with conventional CMOS technologies. So the general workflow on the right looks something like this, where we design and control these memristive states locally. We tune this at a larger scale, and then we start going up to signal and memory functionality, and then evaluating these devices for energy efficiency and neuromorphic computing applications. Our project addresses three scientific knowledge gaps through three integrated research thrusts. The first one, that's led by myself, is focused on the local interactions between these polyoxymetallates and sequence-defined peptoids, and what effect that has on their memristive states and absorption behavior on 2D interfaces. The second knowledge gap is centered around the effects of peptoid side chain chemistry, structure, and composition, and how that can be tuned to control the long-range order of these assemblies, and also the formation of these nano-confined ion transport channels through which these conducting filaments will form. And the third thrust, led by Xiaogen Lang from University of Michigan, is focused on assembling these materials into devices and actually testing their energy efficiency for computing operations. So here are some images that capture the thrust that I described on the previous slide. We actually take a slightly different approach to many of the people in this center, in that we're using solution phase synthesis to make these polyoxymetallates, which are shown on the left-hand side here. So we can tune what sort of transition metals are in these, the size and charge states of these metal oxides, and then we also connect them through different covalent linkages to polyoxymetal or to peptoids, which serve as the host matrix to create an ordered array. So we can do deposition experiments where we create these in very clean environments on 2D interfaces, and we interrogate the current voltage response of individual clusters using scanning tunneling microscopy and infrared spectroscopy. But then we start to assemble these with peptoids into larger scale arrays, which we can then characterize using larger scale techniques such as conductive AFM and simulation such as molecular dynamics. The third thrust then involves taking these materials and putting them into both lateral and vertical memristor configurations, and analyzing their current voltage characteristics, the memristive states, and evaluating them for computing applications. So this is just a picture of the team. So this project is led out of Pacific Northwest National Laboratory. I serve as the lead for Thrust One. Chunlong Chen leaves the peptoid task. And then the folks shown on the bottom here bring a whole range of expertise in material synthesis, controlled deposition, multimodal characterization, and modeling. And then we have some postdocs which are going to be joining us shortly at the end of the July and August to push forward this effort in the laboratory. We've partnered with several other institutes shown here. to bring in some additional expertise in theoretical modeling, machine learning, and device fabrication and testing. So we have Ting Cao from University of Washington is helping us with our surface simulations. Zhao Gan, who I mentioned, is leading our device assembly and testing for us. And then Go Wei, who brings expertise in machine learning models to help us explore the broad parameter space of these materials and select those that are most promising for our applications. And then Jian at Berkeley is also helping us with the deposition and device testing. So our first thrust, again, that I lead is focused on the local interactions in the immediate region around these molecular metal oxides. So as you can see here, these clusters are on the order of a half nanometer in size. They have different heteroatoms at the center, things like phosphorus, silicon, and germanium, which can be used to tune the energy levels of the electronic orbitals. You can also exert a lot of control over those orbitals through the substitution of the transition metals, things like vanadium, molybdenum, and tungsten. So we will be exploring that through selective substitution reactions. The next step, of course, is then covalently attaching these molecular metal oxides to the polymer, the biopolymer, the peptoid in this case. And we're exploring both thiol, click chemistry, and condensation reactions as ways to achieve that. We have unique capabilities, which I'll tell you a little bit about in a minute, where we can deposit these sort of complex molecules from the gas phase using a technique known as ion soft landing. This allows us to create very well-defined interfaces that are well-suited to characterization with spatially resolved techniques like scanning tunneling microscopy and spectroscopy. So this allows us to get the sort of individual behavior, current voltage response, the memristive states of these polyoxymetallates on surfaces, and understand how that's tuned by the parameters that I just described. So here's some evidence of what I was just speaking about. So if you have one of these molecular metal oxides on a surface, they can have up to four different conductive states or four logic states. This is shown here on the right-hand side again in these plots. So each one of those has the potential to be used to store a certain bit or to actually provide a certain synaptic weight in a neural network. In addition to controlling their electronic conductivity, these polyoxymetallates can also regulate cation migration and conductive filament formation. So as you know, one of the big problems with memristors is this stochastic filament formation, which is often not reproducible cycle to cycle or device to device. And polyoxymetallates, which have these localized unoccupied molecular orbitals, can basically serve as transit corridors for these ions, making those processes much more reproducible. So one technique that we've developed here at our lab is this technique known as ion soft landing. And the key advantage here is it allows us to take a mixture containing many complex things. So this is a mass spectrum of these molecular metal oxides. And if you were to drop cast these or try to solution cast them, you would get everything present in solution. But with this mass spectrometry approach, we can individually select each of these ions and isolate it on a surface and examine the effect of stoichiometry, heteroatom substitution, and covalent functionalization. And then we have some in situ capabilities to actually examine the structure of these things on the interface and how they change when we apply a voltage and change the redox or conductive state of these metal oxides. And we have some capabilities as well for UHV sample transfer, so these can be moved over to STM and STS and characterized without exposure to air. So one of the things we think is going to be quite important for these molecular memristors are the local interactions between the polyoxymetallate and the peptoid with the support, and then also with adjacent molecular metal oxides. And one way we can get information about this is by studying the spectroscopy of these things as a function of their surface coverage. And this is an example here from a paper from a couple years ago, where we basically imaged these materials on a surface as a function of surface coverage and showed how the vibrational modes of these things evolve as a function of almost 40 wave numbers from an environment where they're interacting mostly with the electrode surface, to an environment where they're interacting with each other in a higher coverage regime. As I mentioned, we are going to study the individual monristic properties of these epoxymetallates and their assemblies on surfaces. And this is done using PNNL's STM and STS capabilities shown here. We have several instruments, both for low temperature and variable temperature measurements. And this is also coupled with X-ray photoelectron spectroscopy and the ability to dose reactive gases and examine the effect of those environmental conditions. So the project just started this year. We do have some exciting results to share. These are some results of these molecular metal oxides deposited onto graphite. These are conductive AFM images shown here at two different coverages. And then we also have current voltage and DIDV curves here, revealing that in fact these materials do show multiple discrete conductance states, which we believe will be useful for memristor applications. So I think this is the last slide for my thrust. I just want to emphasize again that the polyoxymetallates themselves are one memristive element, but then we need a way to arrange those into macromolecular assemblies with long range order. And to do that, we have to covalently attach them to the peptoids. So we're exploring various tethering schemes using this tris-alkoxyl chemistry shown here, where we can form both amide bonds and also do click chemistry to create strong covalent bonds to the host scaffold. So again, I'm just going to bring you back to our high-level diagram. So that summarizes the sort of work that I'm doing on the local interactions of these memristors. I'm going to hand it off now to my colleague, Chunlong Chen, who's going to tell you more about the macromolecular assembly and peptoid work.
Okay, thanks, Grant. So as Grant mentioned, and also from this overall picture, right? So this project, what we are really doing is like we want to take this bio-inspired concept, as you know, like from the top of the figure, right? So the ion transport in the brain, so it's very important for this energy-efficient neuromorphic computing. So what we try to do for Thrust-2, right, is how we can also create this kind of long-range ordering, right, to tune the ion transport, electron transport, and then we can use a lot of information learned from Thrust-1, for example, this tunable memristor state, right, how we can organize them into a long-range order, so which kind of show in this cartoon, right? If we develop this framework structure, and then how we can use this different charge state, and then the ordering of the peptoid to regulate the ion transport, electron transport for building energy-efficient device. Grant, are you controlling the slide? Oh, okay. Yes, thanks. So thanks, Grant. Like I mentioned, right, the Thrust-2, what we really want to do is now say, okay, how we can use the self-assembly or the peptoid into crystalline material to organize this memristor state material, right, into this long-range ordering. And then to do that, we need to put this memristor material onto a substrate, right, which could be the memristor electrolyte or this semiconducting material. So we originally put four different way to make this kind of material. One is, for example, if we make this self-assembled crystalline material, we can do this surface agnostic coating. By doing that, we will have layer by layer this ordered material onto the substrate surface to regulate the ion or electron transport. For example, if we have the solar electrolyte, this solar ion diffusion through the filament, so then we can use peptoid and POM to control that state. And we used to put like a PECVD to do this PECVD growth of the peptoid material, crystalline material on the surface. But then due to the scope of the work, we kind of like remove the PCVD from our task temporary. So Grant, ne next slide. Yeah, so again, so this is kind of repeat what I said, right? Like, you know, the thrust two, it's really say, okay, for thrust one, once we understand a lot of this electronic structure and how the local interaction, which could be the covalent attachment of the peptide with the pump or peptide sequence, right, influence the pump charge state. Now the question is how we can use those molecular level understanding now built into this crystalline material, right, to tune the electron and ion transport. So then we can deposit this material onto the this memristor electrolyte, so like to develop this organic inorganic interface, right? So to understand, for example, some of the key question we want to understand down the road is like how the peptide sequence, right, or the interaction interact with this inorganic interface, and how we can actually use the inorganic with specific lattice to influence the ordering of this peptide pump structure. And then by doing that, we can, you know, get a lot of fundamental understanding how the ion or the electron flow during the memristor device, the performance process. And next slide, Grant. So this is basically one slice to show how what we had done before. We can actually create a crystalline material, right? So the left figure showing if we keep the same hydrophobic domain, so we can add a lot of different functional group to do this basically kind of like co-crystallization process. So then we are able to not only get this crystalline nanomaterial, right? So in for this project, we want to develop like POM containing crystalline material, but because of this high tunability coming from the peptoid and also coming from this co-crystallization process. So we are able to tune the pump local environment, which in the thrust one, right, we Grant mentioned like the local interaction, it's very important to tune in that memristor state. So there you can imagine for this thrust, once we align those pump in an ordered way, and then we can also tune in the local environment basically to achieve some kind of like a protein, like, you know, nature system, right? So how the local environment is important for ion electron transport. So the middle figure showing this is actually the peptide assembly did on the MOS2. The reason we want to use this is because MOS2 is also one of the very interesting memristor material, which can, you know, tune the band gap, right, for building the memristor device. Here, what we want to do is we want to use this MOS2 kind of temporary the peptide assembly, right? So then we are able to develop this peptide POM and the MOS2 hybrid material, use this as a tunable memristor material for device. And the right figure is to show actually if we understand the lattice of the inorganic material, we are able to use this inorganic lattice, right, which could be HOPG like conducting material, or in this middle one like MOS2 semiconducting material. So then we are able to use this inorganic material, which could be used as memristor electrolyte or the buffer material, right? So now say, okay, use those inorganic lattice to temper the ordering of this peptide POM material, which obtained from source one. Next one. Yeah, so this is the basically the result we had before to show through the self-assembly process. It is, you know, totally doable. We can align like we can align this cluster, right? In this case, we use a POM cluster to show if we have the hydrophobic domain for the tube formation, which is on the left figure to show. And then we can put the palm over there and then to align this into nanotube structure, right? Which we have well aligned this nanocluster. So in this project, we basically use the same approach to align the different palm cluster. So the middle one to show if we change hydrophobic domain, and then we can get this nano sheath. And then the right image basically also show like we can also put this cluster in the middle to get this highly crystalline material. So this is basically the slides to show through our previous work, we have demonstrated align the palm into order the way to achieve the long range order is totally doable. Next slide. Yeah, so in this slot, like I mentioned, like we actually originally put four different way to make this peptoid palm material onto the inorganic substrate. So the first one is doing this solution crystallization, which basically we started with a morpher, right? Then let the peptoid and the palm to crystallize, and then use hydrophobic interaction control the crystallization in the solution. So then we can get a lot of this freestanding crystalline nanosheet. The second approach use this temperate approach, which we can use inorganic substrate as the temperate. The advantage for this second approach is since Xiaogang later going to present thrust 3 to show they already built some device with MOS2. And then you can imagine, right, once we have this inorganic memristor device, and then we can actually use this inorganic surface as the temporary further to grow this peptoid palm, and then use peptoid palm to further control the ion and the electron transport. And the third one is about building a crystalline framework structure. So here we kind of remove the PECVD method. And then we will use molecular dynamic simulation to guide us the material synthesis, and also go away and Dong Chen from Michigan State, they are using machine learning to kind of like screen the current existing like palm crystal and see how we can understand more what kind of interaction, what kind of ordering will be important to build the regulated ion and electron transport. And then we also have the in situ AFM, some other characterization to look at, say, okay, once we build a memristor device, and then what kind of surface charge, and then like a surface potential, or the band gap change of the inorganic material will be useful for us to get a certain performance from the memristor. For example, Xiaogang probably mentioned like, long-term memory, short-term memory, how we can understand more about the, material property related to those performance of the memristor. Next slide, please. Yeah, so this is one slide to show, for example, right, once we can build a peptoid nanosheet. So we have this cartoon, which we had a paper last year to show, right? Once we have this highly crystalline nanosheet, now we want to build the functional, right, into this nanosheet. One way we can do is you can imagine those kind of ball-like, right? If those are the palm, and now we can use a lot of different chemistry. For example, like those click chemistry on the right to covalently attach the palm into this sheets forming peptoid. Next slide, please. Yeah, so this is the result to show. Once we started with, I think here we have three different palm cluster, right? So that's because they have different chemistry we can use for, click chemistry or for this like amide reaction. So then basically once we get this palm containing peptoid, and then we are able to use this for self-assembly. And I think, can you guys see my slides?
I can see it.
Oh, okay. I think then maybe it just, because someone actually cannot see the slides. Okay, so then I will just continue. Yeah. So basically, this is to show like, okay, once we have successful covalent attachment, right, to this sheets forming peptoid. So then we use AFM SEM to show indeed that we have very nice sheets here. And then next slide, please. And then we also have the TM image to show indeed, right? We can see individual like POM cluster around these nano sheets. Next slide. Yeah, I think now like I was transfer this to Xiaogang to tell us how you know we are doing for the device 4-3.
Yeah, thank Chunlong and Grant. And I've talked about the Thrust 3. And so in this direction, we push on the device physics, and it's about the memory strip device fabrication and the characterization for neuromorphic computing. So as Grant and Chunlong and mentioned advantages using the peptoid and based material to build the memory strips. So here I want to further emphasize, and the such a device oriented effort is driven by this hypothesis that the long range order in the peptoid nanostructures, and also there's a wider range of tunability of such macromolecular assemblies, so can provide the new method for us to create, we call this a biorealistic synaptic devices. So for example, and using the different peptoid nanostructures with different this the molecular structure, we could build the memory strips with lateral or vertical channel configurations. So they can be programmed to have a short-term or long-term memory behaviors or the different dynamic and the response characteristics. So they can meet the different neuromorphic computing scenarios. Also in this project, we hope to build the neuromorphic computing network system using such a peptoid-based memory strip. So one of the important feature we want to try is in such a network, the interaction among the different synaptic nodes is driven by the ionic coupling and instead of the traditional charge control processes. So this will be very different. Traditional, this is a CMOS-based memristive integrated circuits. So, but to achieve such a goal, we need to address the important knowledge gap. The key question is, what kind of peptoid nanostructures or assemblies that can be really used to make memory strips that can result in the low energy consumption for operation? Or how do the different peptoid structure influence the transport behaviors of the carriers and the ions and result in the low energy consumption? So to address such question, we have a bunch of the research activity proposed. Grant, next slide, please. So first, we're going to assemble the materials developed in the Thrust 1, the Thrust 2 into the memory stir device structures and explore how the different macromolecular assembly structure affect the memristive switching behaviors of such device. And we're going to using the voltage program and the pulse program method to study the characteristics of such device and evaluate the device consumption. And also we will study the dynamic characteristics of the such devices in response to the spiking signal. So there are a bunch of the benchmark testing we're gonna perform, like a paired pulse facilitation, long-term potentiation depression. And more specifically, in this project, we're gonna use the peptoid materials to build, for example, the non-volatile memory strips. So that's memory strips with a long-term memory capability. So we're gonna test its performance at the synaptic components in the hardware-based spiking neural network to see how good this kind of device can handle the spatial temporal data. And also we're gonna make the memory strips with a short-term memory or the memory strips with very dynamic response characteristics in response to like a spiking signal and some pulse-based real-time signal. And it will be tested for processing the spatial temporal information carried by the real-time analog signal. So this is important for the edge computing and the robotic control application. Grant, next, please. Next. Yes, thank you. And so we're going to use a method like nanofabrication, nanolithography to make a nanoscale and memory stirs involving the different peptide nanostructure. And we're going to perform the electronic ionic transport characterizations in combination with the materials characterization.
Why is this so small?
We will also build the test band, the neural network systems, and incorporate the peptide memory stirs and either testing at the synaptic components or testing at the dynamic memory stir to study their response to the real-time signal or spiking-based signal. Next page, please. So in my lab at the University of Michigan, and recently my PhD student established this called a memory stir-based reservoir computing networks. And right now we are using the 2D layered materials. And in this project, we're gonna incorporate the peptide-based memory stirs and test the performance in the neuromorphic computing scenarios. So here the reservoir computing is a mathematical framework for building the recurrent neural network and used for parallel computing and control applications. So they take the dynamic signal and without the digital electronic process or involvement of the software, and such a network can directly generate the anticipated control signals or some other output for the parallel computing applications. So traditionally, this kind of the reservoir computing is implemented in the form of the software or the firmware. But here we're using the memory stir to build all hardware-based reservoir computing network. So compared with the software-based reservoir computing network, such hardware devices can enable much lower energy consumption and a much smaller footprint. So it's a very good for the system integration. And next slide, please. Yeah. And Grant, can you play the left video? So here I'd like to show you using our current reservoir computing, and we can demonstrate several different robotic control processes. For example, if you have the left video here, and yeah, if you click the, I think, yeah, here. So this is a target tracking and navigation of a robotic rover. So during this process, you see the position signal of the target is directly sent to the reservoir computing network and almost no involvement of the software or digital electronics. So the reservoir computing layer directly generates the control signal to control the movement of the rover. And Grant, please play it. Yeah, another one is my students want to use such reservoir computing layer to control a drone, but it's too challenging. So right now they decided just control one arm of the drone. So here you can see, here's like a balancing bar using a propeller to control the position. So during this control process, the position signal, the real-time signal, is direct physically applied to the reservoir computing process, the layer, and the reservoir computing layer, and you completely using the physical process to generate the control signal to keep the system in the balance. Grant, can you go back to the previous slides? I want to emphasize one thing. Yes, thank you. So in this project, the reason we choose the reservoir computing network is if you look at this schematic wheel in that's a blue color part, this is a reservoir layer. So it's a very dynamic process to take the input signal. And so here we need a short-term memory stirs with nonlinear switching behaviors. And the readout layer, the orange part, to generate the final output signal. So we need a long-term memory stirs with linear switching behavior. So it's a very good scenario. We can test the peptide-based memory strips because it's this kind of versatile chemistry of the peptide materials give us the opportunity we can build the short-term and the long-term memory strips to meet the different and the neuromorphic computing the scenarios. I saw there's a question from Ryan.
Yes, thank you. So my experience before with reservoir compute is for a control system in tokamaks. And the key was that they used like training, like a lot of training to try and get the weights right and the connections. And it, training ended up being like a genetic algorithm for the random connectivity. But is this continuously training itself?
For our reservoir computing, we don't need to train the reservoir layer. So it's a completely rely on the a little bit of randomness of the devices. Yeah.
And so like all resistances start out random and then they burn in over time. Is that right?
Yeah. They just need the nonlinear response behavior that can map the kinetic information carried by the input signal to a high dimensional data space. That's good enough. So if the reservoir state vector is diversified enough, so the readout layer can map to what we want for the anticipated control signal. So we only need to train the readout layer. So that's a long-term memory stores with linear switching behaviors.
Yeah. Cool. So the did you say that the reservoir is the short-term memory stores?
Exactly.
Okay, yeah, good. So cool. No, that's brilliant. It's an autonomous system.
Yeah, thank you. So we need this very fast update rate so we can use for the real-time application.
Yes. Yeah, okay, I got it. That's wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah. And Grant, the next slide, please. Yeah, next one. Yeah, right now, we work closely with PNNL. We already got the peptide nanostructure samples from PNL collaborators, like peptide nanosheets, nanorod, nanotube. So we have been making the memory strips using such material. So here I show you the just example of the memory strips using the multi nanotube channel. And also here you can see there's a memory strip. We try to use a single nanotube. But right now our fabrication process is quite by chance, it's quite random, but it's good enough for individual device fabrication right now. But later we're gonna propose the research to develop methods we can generate array of such memory strips. Next slide, please. And my students already performed some preliminary characterization, and especially for the nanotube memory strips. And we already see this hysteresis IV characteristics that indicates there's the memory strip switching behaviors between the high resistance and low resistance states. So here we set there's a set complying the current limits. So you can see there's an abrupt change. We haven't optimized this IV, the voltage, this programming process. We hope we can further make it more reliable switching cycles. And we also perform this pulse programmed characterization, try to use the voltage pulses to tune the conductance states. We see the change of the conductance states, but we haven't got very neat this set reset courses. So we're still working on that. Hopefully next time I can show you a much better, this go up, go down, this kind of pulse program courses. Next slide, please. Okay, there's also a result from the Lawrence Berkeley National Lab. I don't know if the Dr. Xu or Dr. Zhang is here, like to present.
No, I think both of them are not here. I mean, I can also briefly mention this one, it's fine, yeah.
Thank you.
So here, basically, they're making this vertical device. So the result for this slide to show, even though like on the left, right, it's a silk. I mean, for this project, we don't really use silk, but this is a proof of concept to show because silk have some ordering. And then when they compare to this amorphous peptoid material, even though both have memoristic behavior, right, the ordering actually can make the performance much better, which is as we expected, because now we are going to use this capability to start to measure more this self-assembled crystalline peptoid material, including those peptoid, like the POM containing peptoid sheets I showed in the SRAS2. Yeah. I think the next slide.
So in the near future, and we're gonna do several things. First, we further improve our programming and setting the processes to figure out the device physics for operating the peptide-based MEM registers. And we will do more of the material characterization, and especially we want to visualize the kinetic the behaviors of ions and or the formation of the ionic filaments in the peptide nanotube. And also we want to, I just mentioned, we want to develop the upscalable approaches that can produce the larger arrays of a peptide-based MEM register, not just the random devices on the substrate. And also like the Chunlong and Grant mentioned, and we're gonna study the interface between the peptide nanostructure and the inorganic two-dimensional layer materials. There could be a new opportunity to generate the MEM registers with high uniformity. Next slide, please. So this is the approach I mentioned. We propose this nano and macro printing process. We hope to produce the array and of peptide based MEM register. So we start with a PDMS template. The protrusive features define the device array. Then using the shear direction printing approach, we want to selectively deposit peptide nanotube on the protrusive surfaces on the template. So after printing, we can stand out the arrays of such nanotube structure. Finally, after metallization, we can have the larger array of such devices. Yeah. Grant, next page, please. And also, we will mention that in addition to the MEM registers, based on the pure peptide nanostructure, we also want to study the hybrid structure, right? Integrate and 2D layered materials and the peptide assemblies. So here's one example. Right now, we already start work on that. So recently, my students developed this vertically arranged bismuth selenide. And also, we have a modern disulfide-based MEM registers. And such a MEM register has a quite a unique switching behavior. Grant, the next page, please. So here you can see this is a set-reset behavior of our bismuth selenide MEM register, this vertically arranged device. And using the voltage pulses, we can realize analog conductance tuning. But more important, you can see here, once we stop the application of the voltage pulses, stop the setting, the device is going to hold the conductance states for a really long time. So that indicates really stable, non-volatile retention of the conductance states. And also, from this result, you can see there's almost no post-setting relaxation, because many reported analog MEM registers after setting, there is a significant relaxation of the conductance. And so sometimes people need to integrate such MEM register with a current regulator. And for example, a current limiting transistor to precisely set the conductance states we want to set a synaptic nodes value. So for such device, we have a potential. We could build the MEM register network without such current regulator. But right now the challenge is, and such device still exhibits significant device to device the consistency issue. Next page, please. So right now we're doing this. So in my lab, we deposit the button electrodes and deposit the bismuth selenide. We call it half device sample, and we send such sample to PNL. At the PNL, the collaborator will deposit the peptide nanostructures, nanotube, nanorod, also different POM structures, like Grant mentioned, ion soft landing, and Chunlong mentioned the different morphology. And we want to incorporate the long range order in such a structure. So we expect, and after fabrication, so when the sample go back to my lab, we're going to finish the device structure. So in such device, we expect the incorporation of the peptide nanostructure can regulate the formation site of the filament. So we expect to see improve the device-to-device uniformity consistency. So that's good for our future and the system the integration. Yeah. So I will stop here.
Grant, how about let's just end up here. Let's see if others have a question. I know like we kind of started late. Like any question for us?
I had a question. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi, this is Paul. Sorry, I had some audio trouble, so I'm using my phone. Hope you can hear the question. Basically, I was wondering, to what extent are you planning to look at the heterogeneity of properties of these structures? You know, I'm reminded for some of the later slides on the electrical characterization and trying to develop more ordered arrays of wire-like arm structures. I'm reminded of carbon nanotube research where there's a pretty lengthy history of characterizing the variability from, you know, and properties from one wire to another, depending on its structure or the way that it's bundled with other wires. Is that kind of activity planned to sort of sort through these structures and see how variable their properties are?
Yeah, once we get this array, we want to evaluate the variation from the device to device. But my understanding is a peptide, like the nanotube, maybe it's different from I know the previous, there's a research about assemble the like a carbon nanotube, but I expect maybe the Chunlong can answer the question of how to control the maybe the uniformity of the.
Yeah, the nice thing for this system is, like when we started this peptide nanotube or the nanosheet, we really started with this molecule self-assembly, right? We can precisely control the structure, the crystalline material, and then we can keep actually the same morphology, right? But then tuning the chemistry. So now you can imagine, right? If we build a device with exactly same kind of tube, but different chemistry, I believe, you know, from that aspect, right, we can kind of like adjust the challenge coming from the carbon nanotube, right? Because in the carbon nanotube synthesis, there might be some heterogeneity over there. But here, like, since we are doing molecule self-assembly approach, we know our crystalline material system pretty well. And then once we know the performance from the device, we can actually narrow down to specific tube, right? And then just keep the same morphology and change the chemistry, see how the chemistry as we kind of proposed, you know, to tune in the regulation of the ion transport. Yeah. I don't know,
okay,
Paul, did we answer your question?
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, thanks. Yeah. I know some of you might need to go, right? But if you like to ask other questions, you know, happy to answer.
I have to drop off at 4, but you and Zhao Gun are welcome to stay and take further questions.
Okay, see if there are any more questions. I know we kind of start late, yeah, so.
I have to jump, but thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
I think if no more questions, then we'll just end.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks everyone. See you next time. Yeah, bye.
Have a good night.